and thanks for joining us for another episode of LID Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Francesca Stainer. And for this episode, we're talking to Katie Massino and Giles Lurie about their book, Wonder Women, Inspiring Stories and Insightful Interviews with Women in Marketing. So Katie is now enjoying the life of freedom and flexibility, having forsaken the world of full-time working to pursue multiple activities, including writing, health and fitness, travel, and helping out small businesses with their brand and marketing strategies. As former managing director of the Values Engineers, and with 30 years experience in insight and brand strategy, she has gained broad perspective on the world of consumers and brand, having worked with a diverse range of clients across categories and countries. Giles Lurie is a VW Beetle driving, Lego watch wearing, Disney loving, Chelsea supporting father of five, who also happens to be director of brand consultancy at The Values Engineer and author of The Prisoner and the Penguin, How Coca-Cola Took Over the World and Inspiring Innovation. So about the book Wonder Women. Every marketer knows the stories of Lord Lever and Steve Jobs, and they've probably read Al Rees and Jack Trout and seen the works of Bill Burback and John Hegarty. What's interesting about these masters of marketing is that they're all men. Katie and Giles' book, Wonder Women, tells the stories of some of the women who have had a tremendous influence on the marketing industry, like Brownie Wise, who transformed Tupperware, and Mary Wells Lawrence, who founded the advertising agency Wells Rich & Green. There are also interviews with Edwina Dunn, OBE, the co-founder of Dunn & Bee and the data behind the Tesco Club Card, Helle Müller-Petersen, Senior Vice President at Arla Foods Denmark, and previously the only female CEO in Carlsberg, as well as many more. Both Katie and Giles pull together their findings not only to celebrate the success of these women, but to provide insights for future marketing and the great marketeers, women and men to come. Great. So thank you so much for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit about the story behind the book, Wonder Women, why you wrote it and what significance it has today?
It actually goes back to a conversation that I had with my son, or one of my sons. Callum is a singer-songwriter, budding singer-songwriter, and written a whole series of stuff from rock and roll to slightly more folksy. But he had written a really interesting song, which was a very male perspective. And I was talking to him about writing from a male perspective and writing from a female perspective. At which point he then stopped and he said, Giles, you know all those marketing stories you write? How many of them feature all women? It really made me stop. And I've had now with LID 250 stories published. And I went back and I looked through and it's actually about 15 or 20% only that had the women as a lead one. So I said, I've got to redress that. And started to think about saying, well, I want to start collecting stories where women are the lead. Thinking about this, I then thought, well, I'm going to follow my own advice and get a woman's perspective. Who could I think of who I respected, who I knew was passionate about it and would bring something? At which point I got talking with Katie, and Katie, you know, came along with ideas and helped expand the book. And Katie, you know, probably sensible for you to pick up the story.
So I was absolutely delighted when Giles asked me to co-author the book with him, because the women's cause is something I've been passionate about for years, but I haven't actually done very much about it. So it's a massive opportunity for me to do something about it. Also, what I love about the book and the way that we've structured it is, it starts off with inspiring stories about women in marketing. Very much written in Giles's unique style. So the stories are quite short. There's always a really interesting take. So he's very clever with words. And they're also an easy and entertaining read, which means that overall, you know, with the book, you don't have to read it from cover to cover. You can dip in and out randomly to really enjoy it, which I think makes it a very easy and enjoyable read. So we've got, I think, 40 inspiring stories altogether, and they're all sort of structured around some of the key female themes that we identified. So some are about women who've had great intuition in developing brands and marketing campaigns. Some are about girl power, which is about women inspiring other women. Some are about, we call it the women's place, which is about challenging, doing things differently. And some about women who just worked really hard. So there's a whole range of different types of stories, which are really fascinating. We also felt that we should do some interviews with women in marketing as well. So the book includes a section on insightful interviews. And this illustrates what women are actually facing or have faced across the decades in terms of their marketing careers and leadership careers. So we talk to a broad range of women in these interviews. And we look at the similarities and differences across the decades, how attitudes have changed. We've also got a mix of women working in different sectors. So we've tried to be really diverse with the women that we've talked to throughout the interviews. And we've got some amazing insights that have come to the fore as a result of this, which we've ultimately pulled together in the last section of the book, which is the Thoughts and Insights on a Brave New World. And there's lots of really interesting topics that we continue to talk about on the website, and everybody finds them absolutely fascinating.
It was the benefit, really. Katie has a background doing a lot of consumer research and a lot of interviews, depth interviews, and it was her idea to sort of add that thing. And I think that section has helped round out the book really nicely to give it not just the stories, but the modern personal touches too. So it's a nice balance of some stories that go back quite a while to some current stories, to some interviews with different people of different ages. So for me, a really nice, rich read.
And Francesca, you asked about the significance of the book today. And I think the final section really illustrates that. So, you know, we believe that we're at an exciting tipping point at the moment. The times are really changing. So I think the number of women in the workplace and in leadership positions is growing. Women's networks are blossoming and creating greater impact. There are more female role models. And I think the collective voice of women is now emerging much, much more strongly and much clearer. So there's big change happening at this point in time, and that's also really important for brands and marketing. So if we think about the book in the context of marketing and not just women, the world of branding is really changing too. I mean, Giles, do you want to pick up on this? Because brands have changed. Brands are much more purpose-led, and they're talking about the brand purpose, brand principles. And there's this combination of feminine and masculine characteristics, which are proving to be really, really important in the future world. So it's a combination of, yes, this is the right time for women, but also the right time for brands.
I think one of the really interesting conclusions is all of the women we spoke to, when you talk to them about the future and the future and the role going forward, what they talk about is cognitive diversity, the bringing together of what have traditionally been seen as male characteristics and female characteristics, and bringing both of those elements together. So whether it is for brands with purpose, or whether it is for leadership style. So this isn't a book that's out about saying, oh, men are dreadful and women are. It is a book about saying that women bring an awful lot to marketing, and perhaps they don't get their fair share of credit for it. And that richness of different ways of thinking is the way forward. And that's what we try and pull out from all of the different angles that we take.
Mm.
Yes, and I think it's interesting. So obviously, as you said, you've got the stories at the beginning and then the interviews and then sort of like the future, I guess, at the end, the thought piece around it. But I want to talk a bit about the stories. Were there any stories in particular about women in marketing that stood out to you and why when you were writing the book?
Giles did most of the research for the stories, but we talked a lot about which ones we should include. And what I found really interesting was some of the stories I vaguely knew, but others were completely new to me. And one that I really love is about a woman I'd never heard of before. And I think that's the beauty of the book, because all of a sudden role models are coming up and to the surface who we hadn't seen or recognized before. And there's a story called Women Can't Eat Pretty Pink Headlines. And the story is about Natalie Molina Nino, and she's CEO of Brava Investments. And it's put within our section on A Woman's Place, which is about women challenging and women challenging the status quo. And Giles talks about Natalie and her life, and it would make a great movie. And I agree with that totally, because she's an amazing woman. She's very multi-talented, a very successful serial entrepreneur, but also an advocate for women and an author. So her career started out when she, I won't tell the story in too much detail, I just give the headlines, but she started out, she sort of taught herself how to code, you know, so she could buy herself a car, and she set up local websites. So she spent a lot of time in tech, and she built, I think, four companies. But then she changed direction when she did a theatre course, because what she discovered was that what made her unique in this tech world was her ability for storytelling and creating narratives. And that's so important to marketing, because marketing is all about storytelling, all about narratives. And what happens is she moved into the world of investment. So she set up a number of investment companies. So and the first was actually about helping women-led businesses. So it's actually women entrepreneurs and actually giving them funding. But now with Brava Investments, it's a company that aims to grow startups and support businesses that disproportionately benefit women. So what her ethos is, it's not about actually creating successful women as individuals and women leaders and women billionaires, for example, but it's about creating companies that benefit women, and so helping to invest in and create companies that benefit women. And I love that idea of it's not just about individual women succeeding in the world, it's about making the world a better place for women generally. So she has a great quote where she says, "Women can't eat pretty headlines. You know, women, just like savvy investors, demand real measurable outcomes." So for me, that's really powerful. It's because it's the ultimate end-to-end benefit.
I found it very difficult because, you know, you get very attached to the stories. And I found it was being very topical. The story of Whitney Wolfe Herd, who's just become a billionaire by floating off Bumble, might make the shortlist. But I decided instead that actually I think my current favourite, and actually probably a long-term favourite, is the story of someone for whom was reported in the Houston Press, and this is going back to 1956, and the quote actually said, "It has been estimated that Brownie Wise has helped more women to financial success than any other living person."
Wow.
Quite an amazing thing to say at the time. And you go, Brownie who? Brownie Wise was the queen of Tupperware. She didn't found the company, but she worked for the company and she revolutionized the company. She is the woman who took Tupperware parties right across America. And it's really interesting because it is, Katie was saying, would make a fabulous film, because she had to fight prejudice all along the way, because she'd started out when she was at home and a dreadful experience with a Stanley Home Products door-to-door salesman made her think that she could do better. And she went along and applied. and actually was hugely successful there and became one of their top sellers. But then she overheard two managers talking about her, and what they said was, the executive floor is no place for a woman. So at that point, she decided that she wasn't going to get on. So she resigned and left and joined up Tupperware in 1949. And it was there that she developed the Tupperware Party notion and started selling it. Again, she ran into sort of all sorts of problems because there were all sorts of other men who were selling into department stores and selling in various door-to-door ways who weren't being as successful for her, but were griping and complaining that she was stealing their business. So in the end, she said she'd had enough, and she actually called up the founder, you know, Earl Salinas Tupper, and actually had a meeting with him. And he listened intently and at the time was incredibly impressed and basically set up a new division, which was the Home Party division, and made her general manager of it. And there she built up this huge team. And the role that she had, I don't think can be underestimated, and why that headline in the Houston Press is so interesting. Yeah. She, you know, after the war, women being able to actually contribute to the family income, to feel like they were doing more than just being, you know, the modern little housewife of the time, was so important and so vital for so many people. It became really interesting. In 1954, she was the first woman to make the cover of Business Week, which you would have thought would have been great news. It actually proved to be a turning point, though, in her relationship with Tupper, and it went downhill after that.
Okay.
Claimed that Tupper didn't like publicity for himself, and he is said to have said, you know, it's fine that we had your picture on the front, but I'd rather have had the product there instead. And actually they fell out, and it was so bad that in 1958, he actually fired her, and she got $8,000, I think, in compensation, despite having built the company up to 52 million. And it was then, he then sold it a couple of years later for a couple of hundred million. And she went on and she had a reasonably successful career, never quite reaching the heights again. But there's that famous quote about, you know, behind every successful woman, there's a group of women. Mm. The really nice thing about Brownie Wise is, you know, in front of Brownie Wise is a whole array, a whole army of successful women that she helped create. And for me, it's just a really sort of inspirational story.
I think it's interesting in both of the examples you've chosen, sort of these women aren't just successful women on their own, but as you said, they've created that space and community for other women to also be successful. Mm-hmm. Is that something you kind of see across the book as well?
Not necessarily. Not all the stories are like that. I think certainly our favourites are, because we also identified throughout the stories and throughout the interviews a number of different archetypes. And there are some women who've had success purely because they've emanated men, for example, and they've been not particularly helpful towards other women. You know, and what we actually really like is sort of women who help other women. And I think that's a really powerful concept. And actually lots of women have been helped by men too, to be successful in their careers, but highlighting how you can not just have success for yourself, but you can help other women, other people be successful is something that's really powerful.
Yeah, it's one of the sections of the stories that Katie went through earlier, that notion of girl power and sharing it amongst that. There are other ones, as Katie says, about women who were just sort of very driven and worked particularly hard. There are women who used intuition to get to ideas that other people wouldn't have got to as quickly, or could see an opportunity and flip it in a different perspective, in the way that, you know, I mentioned Whitney Wolf Heard, you know, she had worked on Tinder and actually changed it. She said, she didn't want to tip the playing field. She wanted to level it up. And that was why Bumble changed the whole role of women within, you know, dating sites. The interesting thing is there are different angles to it. We happen to both pick one, I suppose, shows our belief in sort of collaboration, I suppose, that Katie and I sort of share a number of values anyway.
I mean, as we've mentioned, there are sort of interviews as well with people in marketing at the moment and in business. And I think they're particularly interesting, especially you've got sort of quotes from them that stand out on the page. And I think they're quite telling. I mean, one that kind of stood out to me was by Kathy Leach. So it was, "Being a mother makes me a better leader and marketer," which I think is really interesting. Do you think women or mothers particularly have these kind of innate skills that are more valuable in the world of marketing than sort of their male counterparts?
So I think this notion, and Kathy speaks for a number of women in there, there has been too often, I think, a view that when a woman takes time out because she's having a child, she's missing out and losing the experience and the marketing world is changing around her. What people aren't understanding is that actually having a child and becoming a parent and doing most of the parenting, because, you know, it's not just women, but it's whoever does most of the parenting, which, you know, as I said, doesn't have to be a woman, but at the moment still tends to be, they learn other skills. So whether it's innate or whether it's they're brought to the fore or they learned, you know, the quote I always use is, if you can negotiate with a two-year-old, you can negotiate with anyone. But empathy, understanding, balancing and multitasking, the skills and that you need to be a good parent actually translate into being a leader. And at the moment, there's not very much of that coming through. And I think Kathy speaks for a lot of women who took on the major role in parenting and were mothers, that actually the value that that brings to them as a rounded person, bringing out other skills, is just something that marketing undervalues and actually should, in fact, probably overvalue, almost the difference. And I think that idea of, you know, actually becoming a mum can make you a better marketing leader is a really interesting, provocative sort of thought to take away.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Actually, having been a mother of four myself and juggling career, you know, I would take, every time I had a child, I would take a year out. And I never felt that jeopardised my career at all, because I learned so much in the process of doing that. And women are continually having to juggle family, juggle their career, and they're learning all the time. And I think what they do really gain is a huge emotional intelligence. And we have had our Wonder Women that we interviewed talking about, you know, your IQ doesn't change when you have a family, but your EQ certainly does. And then that is of massive benefit in the world of marketing. And also, I think we should not forget that actually when women or parents are at home, they're also consumers. They consume in a completely different way. And they're buying for other people as well. So they're buying for their kids, you know, they're buying for older parents. They as consumers change quite dramatically through the parenthood and understand the broader world of marketing much more because of that.
Absolutely. And I wonder why perhaps it hasn't been viewed in that way. It hasn't been overvalued. Do you think there's a particular reason for that, or anything you can think of? Do you think it's probably just the time out?
Well, I think I mean, and Giles has got a very strong point of view in this as well. The big problem is that when somebody takes time out from work, it's not given any value. So, and it could be anybody taking time out, not just a woman taking time out from maternity leave, but just taking time out to do some traveling, or taking time out actually broadens your horizons, makes you think differently. And in the world of marketing, being open to new things and seeing things from different perspectives is really important. So we should be valuing that. I think people just haven't thought about it. The way that businesses are set up and the way that businesses are run is, or has up until this point in time, because I think COVID is likely to change all of this, but they've been run in a way which has been very linear. So, and career progression has been very linear. Whereas nowadays, there's much greater acceptance of either going forward, sideways, having much more of what is a squiggly career. So times are changing, which is a good thing. But I think historically, it's been seen in a very linear way. So hence, there have been problems around women, especially taking time out.
And I think the whole, you know, it's a very popular phrase to talk about at the moment, but I think the sort of, there is an unconscious bias here. I think some of the older associations of motherhood and people not working and that side of things actually are retained. One of the interviews we did was with someone who's only just become a mum for the first time. And she was talking about how in the lead up to having her child, she was constantly being asked, you know, how are you going to manage? Are you going to go back to work? What's the future hold for you? Her husband was never asked the same question.
Yeah.
Now, that for me is just one of those wonderful examples of going, the bias there is, oh, so you're going to give up your career and look after the child, aren't you? Which is a complete, you know, assumption on that person's part, as opposed to saying, well, actually, you know, are you or your husband going to look after the child, or are you going to have a nanny, or what are you going to do? It's not asked in that sort of way. I think there is a, despite everything being talked about inequality, I think there are still biases there that we need really to think about. And I think the parenting one is a big one that is, I think, going to affect all sorts of people's careers going forward and hopefully change for the better.
I mean, I suppose it's come from obviously women not working and men sort of being the breadwinners, but obviously that's not been the case for so long now, but it's still innate and in our unconscious, I guess, when we're sort of bringing up these topics as well, which, yeah, needs to change.
Exactly.
There's another quote, actually, I wanted to bring up from Edwina Dunn, OBE. I mean, it reads, being a woman in marketing and business, you have to be enormously resilient and energetic. And there are so many others as well in the book saying, you know, sort of the difficulties and the challenges that there can be for women in marketing to succeed. And not just in marketing, but I guess in business generally as well. Were there any common themes you found in the book about the struggles and perhaps the challenges? Anything in particular that sort of ran through all of them?
Yeah, I think I'm going to cover this one off. I think we could actually devote a whole podcast to it. It's a separate one. I'm just going to talk about a few of them, because one of the questions in the interviews is what challenges did you face as women in marketing? So we've got a lot of revealing thoughts around that in the book. One of the things I'm going to sort of start off with is imposter syndrome, because a lot of people are talking about this at the moment, and lots of women talked about imposter syndrome, and it's these self-limiting beliefs that hold women back, especially. So imposter syndrome isn't unique to women. So I think it's a lot of men suffer from it too, but it doesn't seem to be as prevalent.
And what was really interesting was the modesty that a lot of the women that we approached to do the interviews actually demonstrated. Lots of them just didn't believe they were Wonder Women. So for a period of time, we thought, oh, have we got the wrong title for the book? So because Giles and I actually decided on Wonder Women, we thought, this is a great title. It's about celebrating women. Lots of the women we asked to take part were saying, well, you know, I'm not a Wonder Woman. You know, they didn't realise how important they were and how important a role model they were. So and a lot of them had this imposter syndrome idea and this fear of being found out that, you know, their achievements were just purely by luck as opposed to by ability, whereas men will be much more forthright about how clever they are and how great they are. So women really do hold themselves back a lot of the time. What's interesting, though, is that as women get older and wiser, they then realise that what they have achieved is actually something to be really proud of, and that they should become role models. So ultimately, all of the women that we spoke to felt they should be working hard to becoming role models and to tell their stories. So we need women to tell their stories to help other women to be much more confident about what they're doing. So so certainly this imposter syndrome is a challenge. It's holding women back. I'd also like to pick up on what Giles was just talking about, because you've got unconscious bias and I think we've got conscious bias going on as well. So Giles talked about it as unconscious bias, but I think a lot of it is there's overt bias which happens, especially when women become pregnant and when they have a family, and that's still happening today. So Giles talked about Jossie's example. I've talked to lots of other women who aren't included in the book, but they're still, young women are still encountering problems when they become pregnant over their promotions, about you know, equality of pay, all sorts of things that are actually going on. And there's lots of statistics. There is a statistic that actually says when women have a family, their careers plateau or go backwards, but men's careers soar, which I think is really interesting. So men tend to do well as fathers, whereas women struggle much more. And that really is about overt bias. And we've got examples in the stories about women who have actually experienced this quite significantly. So one of the interviews and the stories that we've got is Sandy Griffiths, and she talks about how she had to take a step down when she returned after maternity. Now, that was a few years ago because she's one of our more mature Wonder Women, but you know, she had to take a step down. Cara McCartney, for example, she talked about how proud she was of changing the way that the company she worked for thought about working women. She was the first woman, you know, to have a baby and go back to work. So she's an American within her company. And, you know, there was this assumption that she would not come back to work. And you know, she changed that totally, and she tells a story about how she changed that. Gemma Greaves, who is the ex-CEO of the Marketing Society, talks about the challenges that lots of women face in marketing because businesses aren't set up to be flexible. Now, again, I think this might change with COVID coming. But, you know, she was talking about, you know, everything in her life now, she's a mother, has to orientate around nursery drop off and pick up. And how do you fit work within that? And often it's almost like a badge of honour if a man says, oh, I've got to leave early because I've got to pick up the kids from nursery. But women, it's still a bit embarrassing. Oh, my God, she's not working as hard as everybody else because she's got to leave at 5 o'clock to pick the kids up from nursery. So there is this sort of overt bias still going on. But also, I think what's much more important and is the unconscious bias. So it's the unconscious bias that we're just not aware of, and that's all of us are suffering from that. And we've got some quotes around in the book around unconscious bias. So one was, there have been a million small things, a million small gestures that I can't even remember, and that's what makes it difficult to fight against. Another quote was, you know, it's much harder to quantify the stuff that's going on below the surface. And I think that's the problem, is that the unconscious bias means that people, even with good intentions, have unconscious bias. And it's, how do we overcome that? I think it's fascinating that in the news, the KPMG boss had to quit because he told the staff that unconscious bias was complete crap. So it's quite topical at the moment. So I think if we become more aware of that unconscious bias, then that will help us to overcome it. But it's not, that unconscious bias isn't just about motherhood and parenthood. So we had the Wonder Women that we interviewed talking about the assumption that the more senior person in the room would be a male. They'd go into meetings and the assumption would be that the female was the junior, and the junior would be making the tea or taking the notes. I mean, that's still happening today with some of the women who are in their early 30s who we interviewed. We had lots of examples of women having brilliant ideas in meetings but being ignored, and then a man saying exactly the same thing and it being hailed as a fantastic new innovation, a fantastic new thought. So there are those sorts of things coming through, or this assumption that women have secretarial skills, for example, but men don't. So there's all sorts of things happening which we need to be aware of in order to change things. And I think it's both men and women need to be aware of that. So I think a combination of those things are holding women back or are creating greater challenges for women.
And I think that whole point of women's ability to take some of those slings and arrows and keep going and keep and have the strength and the resilience, and, you know, and different women will deal with it in different ways. Some are standing up and calling it out when it happens. Some are the sort of, right, I'm just going to put my head down and I'll work even harder, and then they'll see how good I am. One of the things that always struck me was when we reviewed this at the end, some of the stories that were being told, and I'm old enough to have been and lived through those sort of the bad old days ago, some of those still shocked me. What was interesting was they surprised Katie less, because Katie had come across a lot of them a lot more. And I hope I wasn't on the end of giving out many of them in my earlier parts of the career, but it was fascinating again to see Katie and I taking a slightly different perspective on it and adding to that. But, you know, for me, some of those were surprise and shocking. For Katie, they were, no, that's the reality that I and my, you know, my other female workers have had to face up to. Probably one of the things that's also just struck me from the conversation is the interesting bit for me now is this is the first book that I've co-authored, and it is interesting listening to Katie and I talk, because we talk around the same thing and we are very much agreeing, but it is really interesting for me to hear how we build on each thoughts and come at them slightly differently, which is all back to some of the conclusions about the book, about actually the future isn't about men or women, it's about cognitive diversity. And I think that's really interesting as we go forward from here. So the women do and have needed that resilience that you talked about and the energy from that quote. And unfortunately, they still do. But hopefully, slowly, things are getting better.
Definitely. I think it's quite interesting, as you said, that Katie was sort of wasn't as shocked.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps, you know, if that becomes your everyday, it's almost just part of working. Whereas if maybe because of that, we're not talking about it as much, because it is just the way things are. And I wonder how we start to change that conversation so that things start getting called out and actually everyone is shocked when that happened and it isn't so normal. That's quite a big question, I suppose.
It is a big question. I think it's really interesting, Francesca, because if I had my time again, I would be very different. I'm very different now to what I was 20, 30 years ago. And actually, there's a great quote from Gloria Steinem where she talks about as women get older, they become more into activism, and they move more into activism, and they suddenly realise the mistakes they've made. So, yeah, I personally was very much like Edwina. It was about resilience and energy, and I worked really hard, and I just kept going, and I ignored stuff, and I smiled, and I shrugged my shoulders, and just moved on. But today I'm much better at pointing things out in the nicest possible way, and try to make lighthearted of it, because I don't want to keep on harping on at people. But it's about pointing things out, and making people aware of what they're doing. I think the more awareness we can create, then the easier it will become for women in the workplace and women in marketing.
It's interesting here, Katie sort of soften her things when she was saying she was standing up for it. But, you know, as someone who can be provocative, I would push it further. I'd go, actually, for me, the demonstration and the truth of what's happened is that women have discovered that anger can be a force for good. You know, men can get angry and are seen as, well, they're standing up for their rights, they're fighting for it, and they're doing all of that. Women, when they do it, again, are going, oh, no, they, you know, stereotypically, it's the wrong thing to do. But actually, some of the women we've got in the book, some of the women we talk to, the reason they are successful is they've got angry. They've got angry at the system as it is and stood up. And, you know, that's behind some of the big movements. Sort of social injustices at the moment, you know, and looking at how women need to say, actually, you know, I'm not going to put up with that anymore. I'm going to call it out. I'm going to make a stand here. I'm going to change things. And I think that is so important going forward. So I'm not, we all lose our temper and scream and shout at everyone, but I am saying that actually, I think it is really interesting seeing where women have got to, I'm not sure I'd call it breaking point, but got to a point where they recognise the injustice and they will make a stand. And I, you know, I applaud them for it and just go, I think it's got to be, you know, it will continue to happen going forward.
I always like the story about the difference between a suffragist and a suffragette. So suffragists did not believe in anger being a force for good, for example. They believed in sort of much quieter ways of protest. But nothing really changed till the suffragettes went out there with anger, and then things really changed.
Yeah, that's a really interesting analogy when you put it like that. Yeah. I mean, this leads us quite nicely onto the future. So looking to the future and the marketing industry, I mean, it's tends to be seen, I'm thinking of Mad Men really, and that show, but it tends to be seen as this kind of very male-dominated place, and probably, you know, quite factually correct in that way. What do you think the marketing industry needs to do to allow more women to succeed and feel comfortable and able to do so in that space? And perhaps this kind of extends to business as well.
I think there are now more chief marketing officers and more CEOs of women are getting it. I think some of the people who've won, you know, Marketeer of the Year and things like that have come through, and, you know, women are getting some better recognition. I don't think it's anywhere near enough at the moment. I think if you look across marketing, there are certain bits of marketing where women do better. You know, traditionally, they've done quite well in market research, particularly qualitative. They've done reasonably well in PR. And advertising has been a bit more up and down. And then the marketing on the sort of company and client side is mixed. I'd say there are some real stars. Are there enough? I think what needs to happen is I think women need to support women. I think this idea of mentoring and providing a role model and overcoming that modesty that a lot of them have about, actually, I've been through a lot, I've learned quite a lot, and I'd like to share it with you so that you can learn and progress. I think that hopefully the latest generation of men are learning to respect, understand, and actually value some of what have traditionally been seen as some of the feminine characteristics. So I think to succeed, I think women need to be probably encouraged to be confident in themselves and their ability and their abilities, because they are, in many, many cases, absolutely first-rate marketeers, and that they need to move forward. I think there are areas that we'll need to address. I think what happens in and around parenting is still one of them. I think the attitudes towards flexible working, along with that, is another sort of one. And I think some of, you know, we need to think about some of the historical leftover biases that influence things going forward. But, you know, if I go back to the interviews, one of the things I would take out is just the positive optimism of a lot of women who talk about the future of marketing and how it's become more purposeful, more principled, more than just, you know, making money. And as such, it needs to embrace a broader diversity of thinking and characteristics. And I hope that's going to be a great opportunity for women and for everybody who embraces that sort of thinking going forward.
Can I just pick up on something that Giles has talked about, and it's enlightened men? So, because there are lots of enlightened men out there already. So, and what I think Giles said right from the beginning, we were never aiming to be male bashing within the book. It was about, and our final conclusion really is that it's the feminine and the masculine characteristics working together that will be really powerful going forward into the future. But from all of the interviews that we did, a lot of the women talked about male role models, and it was enlightened men who gave them the opportunities in their careers. So, and it was enlightened men who empowered women. So going back to what Giles was saying, it's, yes, women need to support women, but we need enlightened men to support women as well. And I think the number of those enlightened men is growing. Therefore, that's going to really help women going forward. The other interesting thing that a lot of the women talked about was about picking the right partner to support you throughout that. So, and marrying the right man, they talked about. So having the support at home as well as in the workplace, especially when you're going into parenting, is absolutely critical for success. So is this, you know, we keep on going back to diversity and diversity of thinking. It's that whole combination of things which is really going to open up the world for women in marketing and in business generally, we believe.
Amazing. I mean, lastly, for anyone interested in knowing more about both of you and your work, where can they find you?
So we've launched a website, so you can by all means visit the website, and please do come along. I think there are There are snippets from the book, but there will be additional interviews. Katie and I are posting thought pieces on there. I'm still, for my daily bread, I still work at the Value Engineers, a brand consultancy, and I can be reached on giles.lurie@thevalueengineers.com. Sorry, it's a very long middle word there. I'm very happy to take comments and to discuss any of the thoughts further. Just reach out and connect.
Yeah, so we would love lots of interaction on the website. So certainly hooking into the website would be fantastic. For me personally, I've got quite an active LinkedIn profile as well. So anybody can reach me via LinkedIn, send me a message. And I'm pretty good at responding quickly to that.
Brilliant. And what was the website is for the book as well?
It's www.wonderwomen-marketing.com.
Brilliant. Perfect. So now we just need everyone to go and buy a copy and get in touch.
Fantastic.
Amazing. That would be
good. Thank you so much for joining us today. No, that was a really interesting conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Francesca.
Thank you so much to Katie and Giles for joining us, and thank you for listening as well. Do remember to keep an eye on our social media at Lid Publishing on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, and at Lid Business Media on LinkedIn, and we'll be sharing more podcasts with thought leaders such as Giles and Katie, as well as other book recommendations and thought leadership pieces. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Lid Radio Podcast.